Am I consuming women and should I stop dating? Welcome to the Therapy Brothers podcast.
I'm Brandon.
I'm Tyler.
We're brothers.
We're therapists.
And we know recovery.
Bring your stories, your questions, your successes with real recovery.
Hey, Tyler, you ready to have some hard conversations?
Let's do it.
Let the Therapy Brothers podcast begin.
What's going on, you guys? Tyler here, alone today without Brandon. Brandon's actually doing something I'm really jealous of right now. He and my brother Rex, they each took one of their sons on a humanitarian trip to Cambodia. So Brandon's in Cambodia right now. I hope he comes back alive. And I'm really jealous. You know, I think it's a cool thing. They're going and taking their sons to kind of get the experience of something completely different than their day-to-day life offers them. And I think it's going to be an awesome experience for those boys. And I'm sure it'll be a great experience for Brandon and Rex. So you guys are just with me today and a caller. I think we got a caller today with us and a courageous caller. Jason, welcome to the show.
Thank you.
Yeah, glad you're here with us. Why don't you just kind of set the stage, tell whatever part of your background you feel comfortable or want to share that would be pertinent, and then ask your question.
Yeah, so been listening to you guys for several years. I guess start from the get-go. I grew up in a pretty religious home, started viewing pornography age 12, 14. Honestly, my mom was kind of not that rigid, kind of open-minded, and was kind of actually pretty supportive of talking about those kind of things with me. But my dad was closed off completely emotionally, never had serious talks with him ever. But religiously, like, despite my mom kind of being open-minded and willing to talk to me, I was kind of too scared to talk to her about sexual things growing up. And so I think from even a young age, felt like this pressure that I was the only kid that was going to church, but was having a problem with masturbation or pornography, and just kind of this always feeling a little bit, I'm the unworthy kid here at my church building, and I'm not enough. I'm not measuring up. I end up going on finding some sobriety for a short bit to be able to go on a mission, an LDS mission. And, during my whole mission, still kind of felt unworthy. Because I kept masturbating. I didn't look at pornography, but I was masturbating to try to cope with life and stress of being out there living alone. Get back home, and I got married within a year to a woman I didn't know before, and thought that would resolve my, like every other person I hear on this in therapy in these shows, I thought, you know, you get married, you have sex with a real person, and you won't need pornography, masturbation anymore. But those things all came back within about 3-4 months. And, she caught me. I lied directly to my wife's face about viewing pornography. And, so there's kind of a lack of trust in that relationship right from the get go. And again, me trying to prove myself of, I guess, being worthy of marriage, worthy of love, me trying to be compliant. We were married for 8 years, had 2 kids, and, I just got divorced about a year and a half ago. And it all kind of, stemmed around. We went through a bunch of therapy programs, one called LifeStar, and it was all kind of very compliance based. And I had to find 90 days of sobriety and check these boxes and do enough. And it became a really one up, one down relationship where I had to kind of earn that back and earn my worthiness, or 90 days before I could move back into the home. And I wasn't able to achieve that. And so we got divorced. And now I'm back in the world, a single person, trying to date with dating apps and in a different world at age 33 with kids. And, so about a year ago, a girl in my neighborhood, a single mom, I met her, and her and I, and this is like one of those lowest moments of my life, feeling alone, trying to figure out these weekends of having no kids, no wife, no one, you know, for the first time in my life living alone. And this girl comes into my life that, you know, also is a single parent and almost like fills that void of, oh, you've been unworthy. You're alone. All these feelings that I had. And actually I ended up telling her about my pornography issues. And she was like, that's the worst thing you've done in life. And was just completely validating of, the fact that's a very common thing. And then she understood it and that it wasn't like a deal breaker for her. And, despite that, so I got in a relationship with her, and there were a lot of things. There were some red flags in that relationship, and things that I wasn't fully, I guess, in love or invested in committing to her. And so I broke up with her multiple times. But every time we would break up, I would freak out, wouldn't want to be alone, realize I kind of depended and needed her validation, and would go back and back and back and try to. Every time we'd break up, I'd beg to have her back, but I'd be the one breaking up with her. And then fast forward, I just got out of a 6-month relationship with another girl. And this is almost exact same story. Single mom, very much a people pleaser. Someone that was willing to give me validation, give me love, give me touch. And yet there were a lot of things about her that I criticized and didn't think it was maybe a long-term relationship that was supposed to happen, because of our different views of lots of things. And I would break up with her. And yet, be totally terrified of being alone and my needs not being met. And so I'd beg to have her back, beg to have her back. And we broke up 4 or 5 times. And so, and then she kind of blew up on me this past month and told me, look, like, I offered you all these things. I was a giver and you've only been a taker. You essentially, use people. And this has been one of the worst relationships of my life. So I reached out to you guys saying, like, do I consume women? Do I need to literally stop dating? Am I codependent? And why can't I stop this pattern? I honestly just got back on a dating app again, looking for more women, more validation, more needs to be met for me. So.
Okay. So just make sure I understand this. You've been divorced for 1.5 years. About 6 months after being divorced, you started dating the first woman that lasted a few months.
Yes. Well, so I met her during our separation process, I guess. So, mm-hmm. I dated that girl for about 6 months and we broke up 3 or 4 times. And I kept trying to beg her back until it was too much for her. And then I've dated a couple of girls in between and then had a very serious relationship for the past 7 months that just
7 months
just recently ended. Yeah.
Okay. And the pattern that you're kind of wondering about is, at least in the last 1.5 years, the interesting thing about part of this pattern is that you're finding a relationship and then you're the one that's severing it when it doesn't seem right. And yet you're also the one that's then trying to beg it back when you're left with like that void of loneliness or unworthiness or whatever else, that emotional pain that comes from not having somebody.
Correct. Yep.
Okay. Which kind of makes sense, especially if you go back to the beginning of what you shared with us, a little tiny bit you shared with us of your earlier years, even before your first marriage. Like, there's a theme that you identified. I don't know if you intended to or not, but you identified a specific theme from the very beginning.
Mm-hmm.
What's the theme?
Am I worthy?
Yes. It's that feeling of unworthiness. That's the word that I have written across my page at the top, right when you started talking. It was like, that thing started a long time ago. That thing started with like you thinking you were the only kid at church that had the problem because mm-hmm. the reality was that every other kid did, but somehow you didn't know that. So that made you unworthy.
Mm-hmm.
And then you went on a church mission and stayed unworthy. How did you get married in the first place? Were you worthy?
Borderline. We were physically involved with each other and we had to. And honestly, that relationship was a lot about, physical, and it was validation and it was touch and we were pushing those boundaries. And yeah, we met with our ecclesiastical leader, and he was like, you guys are on the fence about me not letting you go get married in the temple, and we might have to push this back, and you guys need to stop and don't even be together after 10 p.m. And all these, you know, rigid rules of it will be canceled. You need to have 2 weeks of not doing anything with each other and all that. Like, so yeah, it was more of the kind of continuation of get compliant and be worthy or else, kind of a similar story.
Mm-hmm. Are you, could I just ask you how pornography ties into this theme?
Mm-hmm.
Your history with pornography?
Yeah.
Is there a connection there?
Yeah. So yeah. Pornography as kind of the main pornography, masturbation are kind of the main reasons why I feel, yeah, that unworthiness. And I got back from my mission and started viewing it again pretty quickly.
So you were viewing a lot before your mission?
Yeah.
Okay.
And then, yeah, I get back and within weeks, was looking at it again. But the physical relationship of meeting my wife the girlfriend at that time took away like our physical relationship. I actually did not go and use pornography for several months and had a conversation with her saying, look, I did this in the past, but I think it's a thing of the past. And I really believed that when I got married. And she felt deceived by that, that I was not upfront, but I really thought, because I didn't view it for several months because me and her were physically not having sex, but being, you know, active with each other.
Yeah.
So,
yeah. So before your marriage, can I just want to explore something really quickly with you here with the pornography. How early was it when you kind of started with pornography?
I first saw it in middle school.
Middle school.
Yeah. At a friend's home.
Okay. Can you talk about the outcomes for that middle schooler when he first saw pornography?
Yeah. I stayed at a friend's house and found a magazine in his drawer, and it was actually, it was pretty terrifying. really scary. Yeah, it was scary at first. Like, I felt really, really guilty, or just a ton of like a flood of strong emotions, fear, guilt. But then I woke up the next morning and looked at it again, like after the sleepover. I got it back out and looked at it again. My parents picked me up, and I remember I didn't want to talk to them about it.
Mm-hmm.
But it sparked a curiosity in me, and then I then started, you know, searching for things at home, just kind of like out of total interest of, you know, what is a woman's body even look like, and what is this like, just kind of in more of an educational curiosity standpoint at that age.
Mm-hmm. And then at what point, if at all, did it transition from just education and curiosity? Because that's really normal so far.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah, I look back with some definite compassion there. I'm not sure. I just remember late nights, on weekends, staying up so I could wait till the Girls Gone Wild commercial would come on, you know, and at midnight or 1 a.m. And I don't know what I was trying to necessarily cope with in life at that age, but I was definitely, starting to like more compulsively try to hide it. And then me and my friend Joe, I go over to his home, and we had LimeWire and these other things where you download music, but we would start to mm-hmm. download pictures, and it just escalated from there.
Yeah. You, we must be about the same age because all the language you're using is, you know, Girls Gone Wild and LimeWire, like that was totally my era too. So I fully understand what you're talking about here. So you it sounds like the reason I'm asking this is because I think there's an important underlying emotional component to this that rarely gets looked at for a guy that's in a similar situation as you. And I kind of want to see if we can find the link that it typically starts with this weird mix of, you just described it really well, curiosity, like, whoa, what is this? Like something in me is like drawn towards that. I want to understand it. I can't quite wrap my head around it yet fully. It truly is an innocent sort of like curiosity of the brain is trying to figure out what it just consumed, right? Mm-hmm. At the same time that there's enough of that like fear, guilt, shame, almost like you're going to be in trouble if somebody actually saw you doing it. And you kind of instinctively know that too. And that's where those two things fuse together. So now you've got this curiosity. This is fundamentally where it breaks right off the bat is you don't have the outlet to actually go get that question answered in a way that would not have the guilt and the shame. So then compulsively it starts to form where it goes from being curiosity to then for most guys, it turns into like this almost just like a form of entertainment. Like it's like, yeah, this, I like it. Like it does something for me and it's entertaining and it fills my time. And then slowly without knowing it, the brain starts to then assume that if it fixes boredom, it might fix sadness and it might fix loneliness and it might fix anger. And eventually it goes from being curiosity and education to entertainment to emotional coping. And then that emotional coping is where you would say really the addiction starts to form for most people, where there's that compulsive, I don't know how to deal with life, but I know I can go tune out tonight after everyone goes to bed. I can get a release of something, my stress, my anxiety, my fear, whatever it is. And then it slowly puts its hooks in without ever realizing that that's what it's doing.
Right.
Do you relate to that at all?
Yeah, absolutely. I'm definitely, I know I do that now. Like, I don't know what age it kind of became more. I mean, it was certainly probably at first a boredom thing entertaining and something exciting that we did at the friend's house. But yeah, I definitely, at least at the point of me being a missionary, like masturbating was the way to cope with living alone, you know, being totally withdrawn from your world and from your social world and from, like, you don't have a phone anymore. You don't have your friends anymore. I've never lived alone. You know, I'd never been on my own. And now I'm in this totally immersed in this new world. It's like going to boot camp and you've got to live this total schedule and live with a total new stranger and figure out life. And that was the only thing that I had. Yeah. For comfort, I guess, was the masturbation. And yet, yeah, there's this relationship with it. This is exactly why I'm not a worthy missionary. And I remember baptizing a lady and thinking I just masturbated a couple days before. I shouldn't even be baptizing her. And then, yeah, I get married and then there's at one point my wife said to me, she's like, we aren't even going to be sealed in eternity anyways, because the sealing or our temple marriage doesn't count when you're not worthy. And so like, you won't be sealed by the Holy Spirit of promise because you're the one you're still breaking your covenants all the time. So our marriage isn't going to last anyway. So what are we doing this for?
Yeah. Right. So, okay. So yeah, so you're describing this really well. So you've got this curiosity that goes to entertainment, that goes to emotional coping. That's kind of like, I would say that's sort of like the physiological shift that starts to happen for people. But then you have this emotional thing that gets laid over the top of it. And there's a few elements to it that I think might be present in your situation that we could also explore. And it becomes layered. So you got that first layer of just the way that, by the way, the porn industry designed it this way. Get a young kid curious early, make them feel just taboo enough about talking about it so that they get their education from the industry that's trying to get them to consume. And then by the time they're 34 is where they start spending their money on it. So you've got that system already going on, right? Then you add in this couple of things for some reason, and I know this is really difficult because they are the same word at the base, but so often we confuse or we actually squish together and make them the same, our worth as our worthiness. I don't know if that makes sense or not, but in a sense, like religiously, you may not have been, quote, worthy to go to the temple or to go on a mission or to go, meaning you weren't living a certain set of standards that the church defines as worthiness, right? But somehow that means your worth is also not there.
Which is a lie. Yeah,
which that's the lie part of it, right?
Yeah.
But it sounds like you've lived your whole life feeling worthless rather than unworthy.
Right. Putting them together. Yeah.
Is that true?
Yeah. That's at least a lot of it. And yeah, thinking, I don't know, I was talking to my brother this weekend and telling him, like, I think like I had to be, I felt like I had to be the kind of like the hero kid in the family. My sister kind of, my older sister was kind of like the black sheep and her, our parents. And I was kind of the one that was successful. I mean, I got good grades. I was checking the boxes. I was going to go on a mission. I did get married in the temple. I became a PA, physician assistant. I like school came easy. I thought I could be a doctor, be whatever I want, be the athlete, be the, but I wonder if all of it was, you know, like, I mean, some of it was from my own desires, but I think some of it is to prove, right? To be enough, to try to find that worth.
Yeah. Well, and I think that's what's interesting is that that's probably at your nature to have gone and done all of those things, like to go be successful. That's probably built into you. But the reasons why were confused from the inside out a lot, where you felt this compulsion to perform in order to make life easier for your parents, or in order to measure up, or in order to not cause waves or whatever else, instead of just letting yourself be that person, right? And so even if you're successful, like when you look yourself in the mirror and you've done all of these things, do you like look at yourself in the mirror every day and go like, oh, I like who I am. I'm a success.
Yeah, there's small ways I know I love myself. I thank God for my health and my talents and my knowledge and some things, but like, deep down, I feel flawed. And kind of the question from the get-go about like, have I been using women and am I broken? And like the shame behind that idea is that like, I literally might be an abusive person, or I might be, honestly, like my dad is divorced twice and is dating and looking to fill this void over and over again. Like, is my true character, like looking at my shadow, looking at my negative sides, and accepting that I am a broken person, that I don't know how to do relationships, that I will always look at porn, that I'll always fail to be a good husband, that I will never figure this out. I'm just going to consume women, use them for what I want, never give them what they deserve, never be good. Like, literally, that is what I believe about myself right now.
Yeah. Okay. So that's the part. Like, this is where it gets tricky because it's nuanced, right? Like, have you done some of those things? Yeah, I mean, that's why you're here on the call right now. Like,
yes.
So the awful truth is that you are capable of having done those behaviors.
Yeah.
Right. But the natural conclusion is that therefore more proof that you're worthless. Right? That's the part that gets you stuck, because every person makes mistakes in some way. You could look at those things and say, hey, I'm making some mistakes and I got to figure out what's going on with this stuff because it doesn't quite feel right. It doesn't feel like I'm living in my true authenticity right now. But I know that I'm worth something and worth working on versus, oh, look, there it is. Proof again. Like, just one more notch of evidence towards my conviction that I'm worthless. Right. And so this is going to sound backwards, but part of the way that you start to move through this stuff is to actually backtrack and take a look at what's actually taking place without taking away your accountability for the things you're doing, but meeting the things that have been happening with curiosity and compassion. Mm-hmm. So here's another layer to this story for most people. And this kind of comes from the Wild at Heart stuff from John Eldridge, but John Eldridge says that inside of us as men, particularly, there's a question that burns from the time we're born. And that question is what? Have you read Wild at Heart yet?
I read the first couple of chapters.
Okay. So he says is that we as men, we have a question that's from the time we're born, we're trying to answer. And the question is, do I have what it takes? Do I measure up? Am I a man? Right. We have that question. We're trying to prove it from the beginning. We're trying to get it from our fathers originally. And then we try to look for it from other men and boys. And then as we grow, we start to notice women, and women are like incredible. We're infatuated with them. We don't understand them, but there's something that draws us to them. You can see why the pornography industry wants to get to an 11-year-old, 9-year-old boy and start feeding him the sexual aspect of a woman, right? So, right. So there's also components of the masculine heart that are at play too, that John Eldridge talks about. And he talks about three components to what makes a wholehearted man. And a wholehearted man needs a battle to fight. He's built for war. He needs something to test himself against. He needs something. He needs purpose. He needs passion, right? He needs adventure, something to add savor to life. He needs to go out on that quest and to do something. And then the last one is that he longs for a beauty to rescue, right? So there's already this draw towards wanting to rescue the beauty. There's the need for purpose and passion. But where it gets twisted is that if my question doesn't get answered, that I'm enough, and then I get educated by a pornography industry that makes women objects of sexual things only, then it starts to twist things. And now because I feel unworthy, I'm still drawn to the woman, but now I'm drawn to her to try to get my question answered rather than to offer the rescue, to offer my strength. Right. And so now that's where it gets twisted for a lot of guys. I'm talking a lot right now, Jason. Thoughts on this? Does it relate at all?
Yeah, totally. That's the exact, that's the root of it. Do I feel like I'm enough? Do I have what it takes to be a man and to be, and I keep thinking that the only way to know that answer is when a woman that I choose, that I will come into my life and tell me and prove it to me. Like I can't seem to find it independently or on my own without external sources.
Living in this world of unworthiness, performing my way into a relationship where as soon as that woman shows me that I'm enough, because she says she wants me, or because she chooses in with me, or because she'll have sex with me, then I'll be enough.
Yep.
Yeah.
And when that did happen, it felt this girl for the past 7 months came into my life and was sexually interested in me in the first 2 weeks, and she was more beautiful than any woman I've ever dated, and we went further than I've ever wanted, and it was immediately this overwhelming consumption of I'm so wanted and I'm so sexy and I'm desired, and it was absolutely incredible. I crossed boundaries I've never crossed, and just got almost addicted and consumed into her. And despite, again, the relationship having a ton of red flags, her children not getting along with mine, and all these other reasons why, religious and financial reasons why we shouldn't be compatible, and we would break up, and I'd be so addicted to her wanting me and her wanting my body and the sexual gratification. It was unbelievable that I've never experienced before.
Yeah. Right. Because it was scratching the itch of the way that the rules of the game had been set up. Right. So what's interesting about this is that you go and you take yourself as, you know, I'm guessing because of the language you were using, you're somewhere in your 40s. And because that's where I'm at too. And
close.
And you take that middle-aged man and you look at the things that that middle-aged man is now doing right now. You and I can both agree that the reason why you're unhappy about that is because there's something in you that kind of knows it's not right to be treating the woman that you were with in that way, even though you liked her, right? There's something that doesn't quite feel right about consuming rather than connecting. But there's also another part of you that's in play that never gets seen or acknowledged, and that nobody really wants to see or acknowledge because we like to try people as adults in our culture. And yet there's a teenage, middle-aged little boy part of you that if he doesn't get met with curiosity and compassion and have his needs addressed, he will drive the bus for the middle-aged man that keeps consuming. And so when you look back at that part of yourself that you were describing as curious and what it felt like to like have a woman pay attention to you or to use pornography to start coping and feeling like good enough for a minute or filling the void or your imagination or your fantasy to be able to go there and be enough. Like, what did that little guy need? What did he need in those moments that he didn't get?
Good question. Yeah, I guess certainly grace and compassion is the first thing I can think of. Like, there was nothing wrong with, you know, 14-year-old me, you know, with the curiosity of where it all started. There was nothing unworthy about those choices. They were completely innocent. There's got to be grace seen there, that the fear to talk about it, the fear of what I felt and what I thought about who I was just incorrect about being a normal 14-year-old kid interested in sex and the female anatomy and all that stuff.
Yeah. You just said that with some level of conviction. Do you believe that?
I believe it then, but I don't believe it about me now. Like, I think I'm, because I'm a full-grown adult, they should know better now. You know what I mean?
Yeah, for sure. For sure. And I agree with you. I think there's, I'm not here to like let you off the hook for your bad behaviors. Okay. But I think the way you look at your bad behaviors is different than the way I look at your bad behaviors. I think you look at your bad behaviors as condemnation and as a continued life sentence. And I choose to look at your bad behaviors as things that definitely need some attention and need to be worked on, but that have underlying emotional issues that will take care of themselves if those emotional issues are met. So in a certain sense, it's a difference between worth and worthiness, I think. Like, you know, the things you're doing, you don't like the way they make you feel. But your worth is attached to something different than just your behaviors. Your worthiness might be attached to your behaviors, but your worth is attached to something different. You said the word grace. Where are you going to get grace? Where's that 14-year-old kid going to receive grace?
I get from God, I guess. I keep thinking.
Oh.
I keep thinking from other people, from these women that finally see me, that, you know, pornography is not the worst thing in the world. You're not. I keep trying to find it there. And then that's still not enough to, I don't know, to earn their love. I don't know, but I think, I guess only God can really, or an actual, you guys interviewed a guy named Andrew, I think a couple weeks ago, about like, and he needs to go actually have a visceral, real emotional experience knowing his worth. You can't just logically tell yourself that. There has to be an actual change in your soul of believing it emotionally on a deeper level.
Yeah. Yeah. It's interesting because when you were talking about having met this woman who actually did offer you grace recently, like, I don't see that as a bad thing. I see that as a gift. For her to have met a woman who goes, wow, like, I can live with that. Like, a lot of people make that mistake. There was a different kind of an emotional experience in that than meeting another person who's like, oh my gosh, like, stay away from me. Don't even live in my neighborhood. Like, whatever mm-hmm. else, right? There is a different message, and I don't see that as necessarily a negative thing, unless that is the end all. If she's the end all, and now that she not only can offer you grace for the decisions you made, but now you need to consume her sexually, that's where it's still twisted a little bit, right? But her offering you grace wasn't a problem. It might have been a slight moment of God acting through her to tell you that maybe there's something different about you than you believe. Right.
Yeah. It's actually, yeah. I've had actually a few different girls on dates that have seen me and said that to me. And it really has been healing moments where I've cried with a couple of them from being seen. Yeah. My worth being seen, like, that doesn't define you. Like, that's something that you used to cook. Like, they understand that that's a coping mechanism in this world and in our day and age that it is so prevalent. And there's another moment of grace that pops up in my brain right now. I did, yeah, this most recent girlfriend, we did choose to have sex, and I had never had sex outside of marriage before. And after that first time we did that together, I went home just with, you know, kind of a panic attack almost, just like, I've crossed a boundary I've never crossed. And thought, well, what does God think of me now? You know, I've done the end all now, and I'm, you know, just confirming that unworthiness thing and the worth. And that very day, I had three different friends in my life reach out to me, and some that I hadn't talked to in years. I had a text from a missionary companion that I hadn't talked to in multiple years, and he said, "How are you doing, man?" And I said, "Honestly, I'm doing really terrible today. Thanks for reaching out." And he said, "I was just going through my phone and kind of just scrolling through my contacts, and your name spoke out to me. And I felt like I needed to reach out to you for some reason. God was telling me I needed to reach to you." And he just messaged me. And that day I literally got on my knees and I cried for longer than I've cried as an adult in ages. I cried and bawled my eyes out and couldn't breathe. And actually almost didn't like necessarily have a vision, but I had like this, all these memories pop into my head of me as a missionary and the people that loved me there and the worth that I felt serving those people and how loved and desired and wanted I felt as a missionary serving God and being in those communities. All these pictures of these people came back to me of how much they missed me when I left on my mission, was leaving those areas. And all that grace came upon me of like, God knew I felt worthless or that I was beyond repair at that point and I'd gone too far, but he told me I didn't. And three different people in my life reached out to me that day.
Wow. That to me is so poignant and powerful. Was that God working through them?
Absolutely.
What's the takeaway?
I need to quit believing that he's not there or that he doesn't still love me or that I don't have worth. Like, those are lies coming from Satan or from shame or from other sources. The reality is God does not feel the way I am feeling about myself.
So this is where it gets confusing again, but you're there now, I think. You've, it sounds like for the most of your life, you lived in a relationship with a God who, what, was angry at worst, condemning, judging you, disconnected from you because of the choices that you were making?
Yeah, he's going to keep me out of heaven.
He's going to keep you out of heaven.
Yeah.
So there's that relationship of where's the love? Like, where's God's love in that relationship?
Yeah, not hardly there.
Okay. So is there a different, this is going to sound weird, but is there either a different God that is actually a God of love that would be worth developing a relationship? Or is it the same God that you just need to adjust a little bit about how you believe his nature is?
Yeah, I think I've misconstrued the truth about who God is. Sometimes you read scriptures. I also talked to my brother about this week. I was like, sometimes you read scriptures and God sounds very harsh, and we describe him at church or in our world that he is all loving and he's a father and he's the perfect father. And sometimes you read a lot of things or you get this culture of God is very, you know, rigid, and he is, I don't know, I guess Jesus is the mercy. He is the grace. He is the, I don't know. My relationship there has been strained the past couple of years of, I've been questioning my faith and my relationship with him. So.
I think I'm so glad you came on today, because I think so many people are listening to this right now in a similar situation where you know that the conversation is going to lead you back to a relationship with God. And then you're sitting there going, but my relationship with God is not good. Like, I don't want to have to face God if there is a God, because he's either angry at me or I'm angry at him or whatever else it is. And yet we've been talking about love. And that relationship has been void of love for years, at least your ability to receive it. And that's either a God who just doesn't love you, or that's a belief system that's been laid over the top that hasn't allowed you to receive the love. And then this is where it gets confusing again, is that, and this is my belief, so take it for what it's worth, I believe that God has always loved you. And I believe that you've experienced some things where shame became the source of those false beliefs that disconnected you from a God who loves you. And there's a certain set of values and standards that you believe in, that when you cross those things, you don't feel good about yourself when you do. And between those lies of a God who doesn't love you and those mistakes that you've made, they've fused. And so to unravel those things, you need both. You need to identify your core values and then continue to work in a growth-minded kind of a way towards protecting those values, at the same time that you have a chink in the armor towards a different relationship with God than the one you've currently been living. And if you're willing to receive that love, how cool is that, that you got three people that reached out to you in one of your bleakest moments that were like, dude, I see you. I see you. You can look at that any way you want to. It could either be a really cool day for you, like how awesome was that? Or it could be something more. That's up to you to decide. But what's going to be the outcome if you actually have a God who loves you? Who no matter what you do, he will love you. There might be certain consequences to your conscience or to the risks you're taking with sleeping with women outside of marriage, whatever that is, there's still going to be consequence there. But what if God loved you anyway? What if you looked yourself in the mirror today and all you could see was God's love staring back into your own eyes?
Yeah.
How would your life or day be different if that's all you could see?
Yeah, I wouldn't constantly be on a search, probably. Always needing, always searching, always finding, never filling the bucket.
Yeah. If there was only love, I got news for you. You wouldn't be acting out today. You wouldn't need it. You're right. So the wrestle is with finding love rather than finding sexual gratification.
Yeah.
And you found that in people reaching out to you and things like that.
I wanted to blame God for my divorce too. And like the culture of, like, if we didn't grow up in this religious culture that, you know, forced all these thoughts and perfect compliance, and you know, the world should just accept that, you know, pornography is just a, I don't know. And, you know, or I wouldn't have had so much shame around if I didn't grow up in a culture that produced the shame and produced the feeling of unworthiness, then pornography would have never been so compulsive for me. And so I just want to, yeah.
There might be some truth to that.
But it puts me in a victim mindset, though.
Well, that's the trick with everything we're talking about here, Jason. You can hear it. There's like, is God justice or mercy? You know, is the way that you were raised too so rigid and shame-filled, or was it actually teaching you proper values? Like, the middle ground is probably the place where you're going to find the truth. And that's hard because the middle's messy. It would be a lot easier if we could just blame, well, this is the way that I was raised. Like, well, yeah, but that still leaves you in the position you're currently at right now, still having to figure out, because there's something inside of you. Like, it doesn't even matter what religion you are. There's something inside of you, call it the better parts of you, that as much as you try to cover them over through other forms of denial or other behaviors, the good parts of you, call them your core values, they will eventually always start to rise to the top again. It's built into you. Your goodness is built into you just as much as your badness. And as soon as you start succumbing to your goodness and just acknowledging that it will never go away and start surrendering to your goodness, instead of focusing always on how bad you are, you're going to start building a life of goodness. You're going to start cultivating all of those things that are already in you. But you won't have to do all those things to get love. You'll do them because you're already loved. It's the natural byproduct of being loved, is that you take your light and you shine it into the world. Like, that's the thing where this got twisted way back when, with a 14-year-old kid who needed somebody to sit down with him and be like, hey, son, like, you probably feel some confusing feelings right now. You know what, you're kind of interested in that magazine that you found at your friend's house? Yeah, me too. Like, you know, like, that's okay. There's a reason why I want to talk to you about this. There's a reason why you have those feelings, because they're powerful and they're good, but they need to be used in certain ways because they're so powerful and good. You know, can we work on those things together?
Yeah. Yeah.
That's what you needed. And because you didn't get it then, you get to go back now and you get to receive it from a mission companion texting you sometime randomly, and you get to go find it and experience that love in other ways. But it's the pursuit of love, not the pursuit of sexuality, that's going to end up being the thing that helps to reshape the way you see yourself and the way you see God.
Yeah. Thank you.
Yeah. I know we're just about out of time here, Jason. Do we even scratch the itch of the questions you were asking today?
Yeah, I mean, we went in a totally different direction, but I guess, I mean, the goal is to find the roots, you know, the underlying roots of why. And yeah, the answer is, you know, if I'm consuming, if I'm looking to consume for sexuality, if I need that, then no, like, that is, I cannot date to consume for sexuality that it'll never fulfill. Consuming pornography, consuming dating apps, consuming women, I will not find love. I will not find self-love searching those directions. I can only find it from real love, from real acceptance, from love from God, from maybe real, true, authentic love and grace from people too. Like real women, real people, real friends, but not because of their sexuality.
Yeah, and I'm not saying you should stifle your sexuality either. I'm just saying that that's not going to be the answer, right?
Yeah.
So this is a really short version of an answer to your original question, because people ask this all the time, and I think you have to follow your gut. I hear you listening to your gut right now. If you're anything that's like way at the extremes, most of the time is probably not the answer. So if you decide that you're now going to be a monk and you're not going to like have sex ever again or have any sexual feelings, that's probably not the answer. That's going to be compulsive, right? If you're like, I got to go find my answer, where's the next dating app? That's probably not the answer either. But somewhere in the middle where grace is found, there's an understanding that you are a human being, which includes your sexuality. You're learning to understand sexuality differently than the way you've been treating it. And you need to have interactions that show that difference. And so if you can identify your core values, if you can practice meeting yourself with grace and love, then you should absolutely be in the dating world for the sake of interacting with people on a much broader level than just the sexual level. And so if you can set certain boundaries for yourself to treat sexuality the way you want to treat it, then you shouldn't be out of the game either.
Right.
And truthfully, in the long term, there's going to be somebody who you shouldn't be depriving your love from, because that's the person you are. But you're going to step into a relationship willing to offer the love that you feel because you know you're loved, rather than trying to take it. And that's the goal. So,
yeah, exactly. I don't want to be a taker.
Well, man, you thank you so much for your courage to come on today. I hope this was valuable for you. You know, it'll probably come out a few weeks after we were recording this, and hopefully sometimes listening is even better than having been on, because you're probably a little flooded emotionally. But but thank you for your courage and willingness to come on. Your question is so applicable to so many people. So appreciate you, Jason.
Thanks, Tyler.
You bet. Take good care of yourself, all right?
Okay. Thank you.